I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and our theme today on Sound Effect is Friend or Foe. Around the year 2000, Gregory Utes had a lunch date. The guy he was meeting was kind of a big deal.
Well, I was quite nervous because here's this historical figure. I mean, I had read his book before I'd met him, so I was aware of what a huge, towering figure he was both in China and in the United States.
Utes is a professor of music and a China expert at Pacific Lutheran University. And his lunch date was Sidney Rittenberg.
And I think we went over to a little Italian restaurant right off campus here. I wasn't quite sure what to make of it, but he ordered spaghetti and meatballs. That was his favorite thing. And that kind of did it. I mean, that kind of brought him right down to earth.
Sidney Rittenberg spent much of the last century at the center of Chinese history. The revolutions, upheavals, the massive social reorganization. He also experienced things that would break most people. Persecution, trauma, torture. But Rittenberg somehow came out of it as a guy who likes to make jokes over spaghetti and meatballs.
He just loved puns and jokes and sarcasm. I mean, he's just a funny, funny man.
Sidney Rittenberg's life story is an epic. There's much more than we can relate here. He grew up in a Jewish family in Charleston, South Carolina, and from the start, he was drawn to confronting injustice. He got involved in student activism and labor organizing. He later joined the army during World War II, learned Chinese, and shipped off to China in 1944. But just as the World War was ending, China's civil war was ramping up. Rittenberg fell in with underground members of the Communist Party. They encouraged him to trek across the country to Yan'an, where the communist rebels were holed up. Paul Manfredi is a Chinese studies professor at PLU and another friend of Rittenberg's.
When he first went, he, I don't believe, had plans to stay for very long, and that changed.
In Yan'an, Rittenberg found a kind of communist utopia. It seemed like there was a real chance to build a more just society. And then came his first fateful meeting with the rebels' famous leader, Mao Zedong. Rittenberg described it in the documentary The Revolutionary from Starwater Pictures.
I met Mao for the first time on the day I arrived in Yan'an. I walked in the door and there he was. And I thought, it's like a picture right out of history. Here's a picture out of history. Here's the man that's on the walls. That's what I was thinking, and underneath that was the feeling, and I'm now part of that history.
Sidney was drawn to Mao's intellect and idealism, and Mao in turn was intrigued by this foreigner, seemingly sympathetic to the cause. So the rebels invited Rittenberg to stick around.
And I said I would be overjoyed to stay. My one request would be that if I stay, I would like to be admitted to the Chinese Party.
Sidney Rittenberg became the first American to join the Chinese Communist Party. And this was just as hostilities with the ruling nationalist forces were starting to boil over.
He had to ask himself, do I really want to die for this cause? Because bombs are literally falling out of the sky. He realized the people around him were so completely committed that I think it was a bit infectious. I think he decided this is a chance to change the world.
If you put one drop into the long river of human history, that's immortal. That goes on wave after wave, drop after drop, long after you know it or don't know it. So you either make a difference or you don't make a difference, in which case you're just a piece of mud that's swept away and doesn't matter. But you can matter.
Through the late 40s, the communist armies gained ground, and Rittenberg started taking on important jobs. He'd translate party writings into English and consult with Mao about the West. His prominence got him some unwelcome attention from the Soviet Union. In fact, Joseph Stalin himself denounced him, along with several other foreigners. And soon Rittenberg got a knock at the door. He was under arrest, accused of spying for the U.S.
The room spun round and round, just spun round and round. And I saw stars shooting all over the place. And I just shock, you know, just terrific shock.
He was simply put in a dark room basically for a year. So it was not only solitary confinement, but it was pitch black. And this was, of course, psychological torture.
He was physically tortured too, he'd later write, including being force-fed drugs.
You know, every day is miserable because you're alone, but you're not really alone, because every day you're sitting there with your own potential madness sitting across from you, watching you, and you know it's either you or him.
He was certain that this had been just a mistake. After that year, a party official visited him and brought hope that Rittenberg might be accepted back into the good graces of the party. He offered to take the boards off the windows, get him a desk and books.
And you can stay here and study until your case is solved. Or you can just forget about China for the rest of your life and go back to America. We'll let you go back. And I said, I'll stay here and study.
After making that extraordinary choice to stay, Rittenberg's case dragged on. He was held in prison for 5 more years. In 1955, another whiplash series of events. He was released, rehabilitated, and promoted. In the riptide of revolutionary politics, Rittenberg found himself in charge of a major party propaganda organ, Radio Beijing. He married a young party member named Wang Yulin, had children, and soaked in Chinese culture.
So I think those were the glory years for Sidney, personally, romantically, in terms of being a father, and just this feeling that I've really arrived, I'm doing what I came to China to do.
Many injustices are being committed in the name of the Communist Project, and he obviously doesn't want to be a party to those, and I think believes he can avoid any kind of abuse of power, but that becomes increasingly difficult as time goes on.
Rittenberg admits turning a blind eye at times, and even participating in the harassment of intellectuals.
I think the reason I couldn't see it was wrong was largely because I was living a privileged life. I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't feeling what happened to other people. Otherwise, I think I would have seen it. So it's a kind of corruption. And that's exactly, I think, the kind of corruption that ruins the whole thing once you get into power.
It came to a head in the mid-1960s with what's now known as the Cultural Revolution. The country's youth were encouraged to challenge the established leadership. It was very messy, and other foreigners kept their distance, but Rittenberg joined one of the youth factions.
The question is always, how could anybody have thought that was a good idea? So, Sidney, how could you have thought that was a good idea? You know, he was the one who really explained to me how at the very early days it was possible for someone to believe that the Cultural Revolution was in fact an invitation to the people to reestablish their authority in a really kind of democratic way.
Instead, it would become a bloodbath.
It was a catastrophe of historic proportions. You could only compare it to a catastrophe like the Holocaust in Europe.
By 1968, Rittenberg's faction was on the outs, and his position became precarious again.
You know, one day I have my picture taken in a group photo with Mao, and 2 weeks later, the picture's reprinted in another paper, and I'm blacked out.
Rittenberg was arrested again. Once more, he was sent to solitary confinement. This time, his sentence lasted nearly 10 years. He was finally released in 1977, chastened and disillusioned. 3 years later, he and his family left China for the United States. And that's where yet another extraordinary chapter of his life began. He bought a home on Fox Island near Tacoma. He started teaching at Pacific Lutheran University. He began a consulting business advising U.S. companies on China. It was not exactly communism, but Rittenberg still believed in working toward friendship with China.
We call Papa Sidney godfather of U.S.-China relations.
This is Zhu Tong, chief commercial officer at the Port of Tacoma and a close friend of Rittenberg. At her wedding, he gave her away.
He was my papa. He still is my papa forever.
Zhu and Rittenberg connected over a mutual acquaintance. Zhu's uncle had briefly served as the Chinese Minister of Culture in the 1960s before falling out of favor. Like Rittenberg, he too was imprisoned in solitary confinement. Zhu says her uncle was traumatized by it.
I can't help but wonder, if he didn't have that experience, where would he be today? My uncle is a very talented man, but the spirit has been broken a bit.
It's not surprising that years of solitary confinement would leave scars. What is surprising is that Sidney Rittenberg seemed to emerge not only intact, but still full of vigor and humor and idealism.
Even though he had gone through such hardship and yet emerged in such a positive way is just amazing to me. I have never heard him complain.
Gregory Utes from PLU has thought a lot about his friend's resilience through those dark years in prison. He attributes it in part to Sidney's humor and compassion. He'd joke with the prison guards and ask about their families. But there was something else, too.
He also had a very strong sense of self-discipline. You know, every day he would clean his cell as if there was anything to clean. He would have periods of the day when he would do certain mental work. Today I shall remember what I remember of Herodotus or Plato. You're not going to give in to the madness that's staring you in the face across the cell. So inside this humorous, compassionate, lovely man is this backbone of steel that I frankly don't understand.
Sidney Rittenberg died in 2019 at age 98, having come to believe that Mao Zedong was both a great historic leader and a great historic criminal. He regretted his role in some of the darker parts of China's struggles. But he never backed away from his determination to add to the long river of human history.
I remember saying to Yu Lin, when I first started getting involved, I said, you know, I may end up covered with mud from head to foot, but if anything was ever worth it, this is it.
Special thanks to Lucy Ostrander, along with Irv Drasnin and Don Sellers, for material from their film, The Revolutionary.